Chapter 4. Why Economic Science Has a Limitless World View. 2% is the minimum growth rate predicted by almost every institution for the global economy until the year 2050. While this doesn't sound like much, we now know that 35 years of 2% growth translates into a doubling of economic output, which also almost doubles our energy and resource consumption, at least if we improve our efficiency at the pace of the recent past. There is limited reason to believe that this will change, as we have explained. Now we want to understand how and why economic science got to the impression that we could grow at that or an even faster pace forever. The reason behind this assumption is the same as for us ordinary people. For over 200 years, with only a few short-term bumps, the world economy has indeed been growing at an amazing pace. And with our brains wired to use our recent experience to define rules for the future, it is not surprising that economic theory has come up with a worldview that sees our economic systems expanding forever at high speed. Based on that long-term experience of continuous growth, 20th-century economists revised older economic theories tied to land availability and productivity, which obviously were as finite as available land on our planet, with models built on variables that theoretically had no limits. The most common concept, which is used for almost all relevant economic predictions, is the one driven by the so-called Cobb-Douglas production function. The idea assumes that if we grow two key inputs of production, labor and capital, while improving their productivity, our economic output will grow. Once we understand that more low-cost energy and natural resources are a fundamental requirement to increase economic activity, this worldview comes across as a bit short-sighted. During the past 200 years, when fossil energy and other natural resources were available without limits, and with the continuous improvement in technology and better ways to find and explore new sources and more uses, we had no limits imposed on us from a resource perspective, which is why that simple Cobb-Douglas formula seemed valid, until recently, that is. When dissecting growth more closely over the past centuries, we can conclude that those variables were not representing reality. In scientific terms, labor, capital, and factor productivities largely depend on resource and energy availability and productivity. Or differently put, until there was no limit to energy and natural resources, the Cobb-Douglas equation worked well. Once limits kicked in, we can add humans and capital as much as we like, yet output rises little, if ever, or we get hungry humans and empty factories. This principle is easiest to understand when taking a step back. If there isn't enough food to feed the workers, or enough energy to run the factory, or some resource inputs go missing, there will be no new car, no matter how great workers and factories are. Or, in realistic terms for today's world, if finding the energy and natural resources becomes more cumbersome, it becomes more difficult to add economic output to an already large and complex economic system. Doesn't that sound familiar? Haven't we recently read about big youth unemployment problems around the world, which seems to have no solution? And haven't we also seen that large corporations keep hoarding large amounts of cash or paying it back to shareholders, lacking good investment opportunities? These are just symptoms, but highly indicative that our traditional production function is now limited by its key underlying variables, energy and resource input, and the productivity thereof. Another area where economic theory has erected a dogma based on an incomplete view, driven by an initially correct observation, is the concept of substitution. The ability to switch between different inputs like labor and capital, or resources, as price and availability changes. While it is plausible and obvious that a buyer reacts to supply shortages or price increases for one good, for example, pork meat, by purchasing an alternative with sufficiently similar properties to satisfy the need for protein, for example, chicken, this rule gets overblown as soon as economists ignore the obvious. Not everything has a meaningful substitute. A few examples. You can't grow plants without water, nitrogen, and phosphorus. And you can't economically erect buildings without some key materials like concrete, timber, steel, copper, aluminum, and many others. After the financial crisis of 2008-2009, enormous efforts were made to counter the downward trend that had led to the global economy shrinking for the first time in more than 60 years, and to restart the growth engine. The objective was to get back on the predicted growth path based on a view ignoring resource and energy inputs. Despite many economic stimulus measures, deficit spending, record low interest rates, and credit guarantees applied to markets or entities requiring support, growth targets were regularly missed. Even today, after 8 years, that growth engine is still sputtering for most. So far, few people in politics, the media, and the corporate world have picked up on that paradox of how little has come from all those unprecedented interventions. Everybody is still hoping for things to get better next year. But unless we find something that eases the pressure on the underlying independent energy and resource variables of our economy, it won't. And as long as we keep ignoring that reality and following economic thinking based on just labor, capital, and their productivity that suggests we can rapidly double the size of our economy, we will only get into more trouble down the road. Some people say lower resource prices, which we have observed since 2015, will support a return to the old normal and are an indication we are actually not facing resource limits. Quite the contrary is true. The heavy price swings for energy and other natural resources since 2008 are a symptom of resource constraints and have detrimental effects on economic stability and investment in mining and extraction. If nobody is ready to invest in new exploration because of the risks, it will become even more difficult to further grow the economy. All it takes to arrive at a more realistic view is to look out for what truly powers an economy and always has. In the old days, before the 20th century, economists understood that we live in a finite system. It is the capacity of the land we live on that determines how wealthy we can get. For a short time, probably a few more decades if we are lucky and use less than projected, we can continue to harness prehistoric land productivity of hundreds of millions of years to fuel our lifestyle, in the form of fossil fuels. But further expansion is difficult, and as soon as we have to go back to a world of land productivity based on current solar inputs, the limits we are talking about will become obvious. Economic theory must retrace its historic roots to be meaningful for this future.